Have a little surprise for you all this morning. We've reading from chapter 36 that covers the killing of Rishtasura and then Narada going to Kamsa, etc. So I'm going to read a few verses from Brihat Bhagavatamrita where Krishna's pastimes of killing Arishtasura and then following that Keshi being described, because that's the sequence that's in Srimad Bhagavatam. But what Sanatana Goswami writes is different, slight variation on what Srimad Bhagavatam says. He explains that Keshi and Arishta came at the same time. And then different things happened when they came. So here we go. Now this narration follows in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It's not necessarily chronological, but it follows the Kaliya serpent being subdued. I'll just read because it's really nice. So we have the context. Flooded with streams of tears from the happy eyes of Nanda and the others, as again and again they embraced him and offered arati to him, Krishna, after mercifully giving some instructions, sent the serpent king out of the lake. And the commentary reads, Srila Sanatana Goswami explained that the Lord's instructions to Kaliya are given in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:16, verses 60 through 61. So that's chapter 16, and we're just going to jump to chapter 36. But next, Brihat Bhagavatamrita verse. Pleased by a great and beautiful festival of singing, instrumental music, and other festivities, celebrated by the happy gopas and gopis, the Lord went to his home. There's something else that happened after the Kaliya serpent. There was a fire. But that's this narration. Then next, kadachit. Once, it's kadachit is sometimes. We're hearing this again and again. So once, Kamsa's two great demon servants, Keshi and Arishta, the first assuming the form of a great horse, and the second assuming the form of a bull, both of them, so tall, their great bodies touched the sky, both of them, like death personified, and both of them, terrifying the gopas, wreaking havoc in Gokula, and with their roaring made every living entity fall to the ground, came to Braja. Surrounded by his dear friends, terrified of the two demons, Krishna, comforting them and showing them his heroic power, flexed his arm. First, the horse came running and Krishna kicked it far away. Then, Krishna went to the bull, pierced its nose, and brought it before the deity of Lord Shiva. Slightly different interaction. And commentary says, Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Krishna tied a rope to the bull's nose and brought it before the Shiva Linga in Vrindavan, so Lord Shiva could ride it. Arishta. When the horse came again, very powerful Krishna, jumping on its back, subdued it, and ordering it to go here and there, was very splendid and glorious. next text. With his friends and relatives, Krishna enjoyed riding on the horse. As with pastimes of wonderful leaps of thousands of hands, it wandered on the ground and in the sky. Next, in a moment, defeating it, bringing it under his control and bridling it for pastimes of riding, Krishna kept the horse in Braja. In the same way he kept the bull for pulling carts. A little different. A little corral for Keshi, they go horseback riding. So we discussed yesterday variations on the particulars of Krishna's pastime. So we must take it that it's not fiction. It's just another one of Krishna's pastimes, perhaps in a different yuga cycle or whatever it is. And Krishna just enjoys in varieties of ways because variety is the mother of enjoyment. We discussed that yesterday, so I thought to read that this morning. So Narada, we heard, back to chapter 36, Narada heard, and Narada spoke to Kamsa. Kamsa heard him, and then he's going to now take action. Text 20 from chapter 36. After Narada left, King Kamsa summoned Keshi and ordered him, go kill Rama and Krishna. So the text is Rama Keshavan, Keshavau. Rama and Keshava, kill them both. Purport. Before having Krishna and Balaram brought to Mathura, Kamsa tried sending one more demon to Vrindavan. And Vishwanath writes, Kamsa ordered Keshi, go to Braja and kill them. The statement also means, you should attain them and merge into them. Get killed. That's another way of rendering the Sanskrit. Jiva Goswami writes, he gave instruction to Keshi after Narada left, since he feared that sending Keshi would be breaking Narada's instructions. Or, so he waited till he left before doing his thing. Or, that Narada would prevent him from sending Keshi. He called him Abhasya, saying, oh, my brother. Oh, great warrior. According to Parashara and Vaishampayana, he gave instructions to Keshi through messengers. This means, you know, in Vishnu Purana, because Parashara is the narrator. So this pastime is in other Puranas, in other words. Sanatana Goswami writes, he respected Keshi by addressing him as Bhavata. Rama means he who enjoys in Gokula. The two words Rama Keshava mean, quote, those two who gave up their friends and enjoy in Gokula. He finds fault with them and does not say their names directly out of hatred. Or, since their names are well known, he addresses them with disrespect. And then, last little commentary. Kamsa ordered Keshi, go to Braja and kill Hanyetam, Krishna and Balaram. According to the inspiration of Saraswati, the goddess of learning, Hanyetam can also mean you should meet them, or in other words, you should be killed. And the next text, 21. The king of the Bojas next called for his ministers. Headed by Mushtika, Chanura, Shala, and Toshala, and also for his elephant keepers, the king addressed them as follows. Jiva Goswami is the only commentator who writes, Kamsa called for his ministers with respect, Sam Ahuya, and then engaged them. And the next is 22-23, translation. My dear heroic, Chanura and Mushtika, please hear this. Rama and Krishna, the sons of Anakandundubi, Vasudev, are living in Nanda's cowherd village. It has been predicted that these two boys will be the cause of my death. When they are brought here, kill them on the pretext of engaging them in a wrestling match. And commentary by Vishwanath, my death has been indicated by Narada. That's it. Jiva Goswami has a longer commentary. He repeats the word, Bho, Bho, my dear, so that they pay attention. Chanura and Mushtika were his main ministers, so he addresses them. He calls them courageous, Vira, to incite them. O courageous warriors, O Charuna, O Mushtika. Kila means certainly. The statement is supported by Narada's words. So certainly predicted. This statement is supported by Narada's words. Narada, this is Jiva Goswami's commentary. Narada had told Kamsa about the arrangements before the birth of Krishna. We discussed this yesterday evening, chapter 1, before chapter 2. So, sons of Vasudeva and Devaki are born, Narada visits and advises Kamsa what to do. Jiva Goswami's commentary says, Narada has said that I will certainly, Kila, die because of these two. I'm going to go read what Narada says. So, Canto 10, Chapter 1, Text 64. Prabhupada's translation, BBT, reads, Once, the great saint Narada approached Kamsa and informed him of how the demoniac persons, who were a great burden on the earth, were going to be killed. Thus, Kamsa was placed in great fear and doubt. Then, in Jiva Goswami's commentary on that verse, 10.164, he gives the Sanskrit for Harivamsa that explains the same pastime this way. Coming from Svarga to a grove in Mathura, Narada sent a messenger to Kamsa. The messenger told him, Kamsa, of Narada's arrival. Hearing of his arrival, lotus-eyed Kamsa quickly came out of his city. He saw Narada shining like the sun, with no impurities, blazing with effulgence. He welcomed and worshipped Narada properly and offered him a pure seat. I assume he brought him back to his city. Narada sat on the seat and spoke to Ugrasena's son, who was full of anger, quote, You have worshipped me according to the rules. Please hear and understand my words. On the order of the devatas, I went to huge Meru, friend of the sun, with my Veena, I came to the peak of Meru, where the Devatas were assembled. I heard the Devatas discussing about a very cruel method of killing you and your associates. Like, that's, you know, it's a spy mission, sounds like. And he's disclosing his spy activities to the other person. He looks like a friend. And in the next two verses, that's 65, 66, the BBT commentary, which is Prabhupada's, Srila Jiva Goswami has mentioned how Narada gave Kamsa this information. This incident is described in the Harivamsa. Narada Muni went to see Kamsa by providence, and Kamsa received him very well. Narada therefore informed him that any one of the sons of Devaki might be Vishnu, because Vishnu was to kill him. Kamsa should not spare any of Devaki's children. Now, we'll read what he said. It's not exactly what it says in Harivamsa, but that's the conclusion from this morning's verse. These two is prophesied they would kill me, confirmed by Narada. So the first six sons were killed. So that left two of Devaki's eight sons. And it was assumed that Balaram was a miscarriage, Devaki. But during chapter 36, Narada said, no, that wasn't what happened. Here's what happened. And so then there's now, based on what Narada says here in chapter 1, any one of the sons. And that means there's two. So it's prophesied these two will kill me. It was actually the eighth son. But Narada's confirmation, beside what the voice from the sky said, is any one of them can be Vishnu. So here's upon receiving, okay, Narada Muni advised, kill all the children. Narada's intention was that Kamsa, by killing the children, would increase his sinful activities so that Krishna would soon appear to kill him. Upon receiving the instructions of Narada Muni, Kamsa killed all the children of Devaki one after another. Now, Narada, we heard yesterday, Narada was not an ordinary person. He's gifted with omniscience. That's pretty special. So he knew the six sons of Devaki would be killed, and he knew the history that, you know, how, why it was so that they were to be killed. There's a long history which I won't go into. It's described. So he knew the plan. So he's not just, there's not only one factor. He wanted his sins to be increased, so he instructed him to do sin. Kill six children. That's not everything. I mean, so the Harivamsa commentary continues. Narada says, O Kamsa, you will be killed by the eighth child of Devaki, your sister in Mathura. He who is the goal of the Devatas and the secret of the Vedas will kill you. He is superior to the Devatas and without birth. I am telling you this astonishing divine news. He killed you in the past. Remember that. So imagine the fear and, you know, anger and all kinds of violent emotions. So now I'm going to go back to the Jiva Goswami's commentary on these verses 22-23, and we're done. Narada had told Kamsa about the arrangements before the birth of Krishna. Quote, Narada had said that I will certainly, Kila, die because of these two. They should be brought here, since in Braja, you will not be able to kill them because of the strength of the place. Kill them through a wrestling match. Otherwise, it will be impossible to kill them. Unquote. There is another meaning, however, they should be brought here, hanyatam, so that you can be killed. It's very involved, like, you know, a mystery. I asked some kids that read the whole Harry Potter story, because that was suspicious. Like, where is this all going? And, you know, aside from the intrigue, and I don't know all the names and this and that and the other thing, the punchline in the final volume is the soul of one of the person, you know, prime persons, split into two souls. Is that a fact? And kids are reading this. Not only reading it, like, you know, following it. It's got to be true because what's her name said it. So this isn't, all of this is, the intrigue is not fiction. But there's certainly intrigue. So, but, you know, they're interested in Harry Potter and not this intrigue. Because, you know, it has to do with the modes of nature, doesn't it? Why was that book so popular, besides she's a good writer? It's the mode of nature. Stimulating that mode of nature, you know, witchcraft. You know, right straight from Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, so leave that topic aside. This is this. Everything in relation to Krishna and Krishna Katha is liberating. And we've been through this several times. There's lots of things we don't understand. You know, mystery is mysterious. So, and it's very high, like, wait a minute. And it's filled with inconceivable potencies. But it's not only Krishna is, but, and the narrations are, but the effect upon us is also. How is, it's Kali Yuga. And symptoms of Kali Yuga we know very well. So what's to be done? If you're a transcendentalist, or if you're Krishna, what's to be done? It's, you know, it's Krishna's arrangement, there's Kali Yuga. But what about the people that are spiritually inclined? Well, it's Kali Yuga, so you know, Kali will cheat them. Their spirituality. And it's not spirituality. But then there's also people that want the real thing. And besides people that want the real thing, they just forgot they wanted the real thing. So the demoniac tendencies, Sango Pangashtra Parshada, Yang Gyai Sankirtana Prayar Yajanti Hi Samedasa. The Lord Chaitanya's method is not killing demons, Lord Chaitanya's method is killing demoniac mentality, and demoniac mentality is cover Krishna. So here's Krishna. And Krishna is everything. So the Bhagavatam covers A to Z. And it's, you know, it's pretty fantastic. I mean, for example, the process of creation.
Wow.
But, you know, what does science say? Pretty fantastic, right? Big Bang. And it's in textbooks. You gotta study it and get an A in your exam to explain Big Bang. Any discussion about the Vedic model? Nope. It banned separation of church and state. Big Bang. Or, you know, and without going into it further. And it's always changing too. There's people that say, no, not Big Bang. I mean, I'm just going to go off on that. I was shocked when I, after I became a devotee and I, because I had been on the path of, you know, pursuit of academic and medical career and all that, and became a devotee, kind of like lost track of everything. I read something in National Geographic where it was speaking of continental drift like it's a fact. When I read it, it was several times. I was shocked. Because when I was a kid, there was a theory that people, that scientific community laughed at. They explained it, and they laughed at it. And then some years passed, and now someone that doesn't accept it, they laugh at it. And that's science. No, thank you. That's not science. So what's science? Anyway, this is a spiritual science that this sound vibration, I'm contemplating an essay that says sound covers and sound liberates. From Sankhya philosophy, the first element is ether, and within ether is sound. That's the tanmatra, this object. And it's sound, not ether, but it's sound that generates all the other things. So here we are, sound-generated illusion. And it's perpetrated by sound. You know, modes of nature, sound. And then we're moved by the modes that are under Krishna's direction, and we're in la-la land, based on and thinking this is real, and anything other than this isn't real, or we can't verify it, or whatever. And sound liberates. So that's an interesting science. It's a Sankhya teaching, and you know, you can't prove it, and you can't disprove it. You can't disprove, well, there's no evidence from science that says it's not so. You know, falsifiability and all that. Anyway, without, you know, we're educated people, or becoming educated people, and we're sitting here hearing something that's just completely other than what our education taught us, or is teaching us. And how do you process that? Well, it's interesting. But it's not going to get me an A in my exam. It's not going to get me ahead in the, you know, the material sphere. People may think it's just goofy. Or worse. So we just keep quiet about it. So for in the education process, it's a very nice challenge. In one sense, it's intimidating, but those who are in the education process, you have to have stronger intelligence than material intelligence. Like an intelligence that's learning what science says so you can get an A in your exam. And it's an intelligence that says, that's not right. The Vedic picture has a very different picture. And it's bulletproof. And the pramana is not science that's changing. It's a whole thing. The axioms of science are ever changing. And the axioms, a priori truth, is unchanging. Take a choice. So, have parallel intelligence. Learn the science. Listen carefully to what it's saying. Does the bucket have holes in it? And this other bucket, does it have holes in it? Well, we don't assume that it has holes in it because the source is the perfect person. It's Shabda Praman. Aparusheya Shabda Praman. So I don't have to discover the truth. It's being revealed. I have to hear it and become purified and try to understand how this fits together with that, fits together with that, and the truth's Krishna Tattva through spiritual sound, and it's liberating. The result of it is remembrance of Krishna and being inspired to be in Krishna's service. That's what this sound vibration does. It awakens the service propensity for Krishna, because service propensity is going to be for something else. Serve the senses or the objects of the senses. Because service is our constitutional position. So while this is very elevated subject matter, and, you know, why is Narada doing what he's doing? It sounds unethical. Like it's not good. It's not the mode of goodness behavior you expect from a saint. Look what he's doing. Kill the children. Trash him. I mean, you know, put him in a can. Throw the can away. He's bad. So how do we understand? There's a supreme absolute truth that's being revealed in a mysterious way. I want to speak of all the other things, like, you know, things that we were discussing. How many calves and cowherd boys were there and how they fit in a small tract of land. It's like, it doesn't match the mind, the material mind. It's mind-blowing. Inconceivable. Yeah. So how do you understand the inconceivable? By sound. From the right source. With oral reception and gradual purification, and things become revealed. Krishna is revealing himself through sound. That's what the Bhagavatam is. Spoken through Shukadeva Goswami, compiled by Vyas, taught to Shukadeva Goswami, spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. And through disciplic succession, we get the same sound vibration. Where Krishna is being revealed to us, Krishna Tattva. And you understand Krishna, Purnarjanmana, Mameti. So that takes faith. And doing the other takes faith. Close your eyes and just say, you know, I'm just going to follow this path of enjoying the senses. Or not even know that you're closing your eyes and just do it. Just do it. Because that's what all the other kids are doing. That's the game. And you just play the game and win. So somehow, by good fortune, we've contacted this teaching in disciplic succession. I mean, good fortune from our side and extreme compassion from our Acharya's side, and specifically our founder Acharya. And here we are in this, you know, we're neither here nor there. But we're in the process of becoming, with faith that by following, we'll get there. Now, how do you deal with this? Because, you know, there's responsible life. So, you know, perform your prescribed duty and always think of Krishna. That's our assignment. So stay in our position. Shrutigatam, tanavan manobir. That's what we do. There's challenges, for sure. And don't do it, and the challenges are more challenging. And, like, just not acceptable for someone that's becoming a devotee. The other option, when we're weak, it may look like that's attractive. But when we're not weak and we're lights on, it's not at all attractive. Where does that path take people? The path of illusion is not attractive when your light's on, when you're thoughtful. So here we are, hearing the inconceivable. And Narada is saying, kill all the 6 children, because any one of them might be Vishnu. And he does exactly that. So now he is sending Keshi, and he's making arrangements with Chanur and Mushtika. You know, it happens. As soon as they leave, he brings Akura. Oh, Akuraji, I'm dependent on you. Only you can do this difficult task. Flattery, flattery, flattery. Anyway, so we'll hear coming up. Divine and Dvaniak. So let's see if there's some discussion. Oh, it's 8:15. Anything in the room, and then we'll do our online.
Maharaj, with respect to Narada suggesting killing of children of Devaki, is there any description or in the commentary about how Devaki feels about it?
How what?
How Devaki feels about Narada suggesting killing her children.
Maybe Devaki didn't know. Just Kamsa did what Kamsa did. Okay. Because her husband said, you know, it's the 8th, so I'll give you each of the children, you can do with them what you want. And he kept his word because he's truthful. So it doesn't say that she knew what Narada said. She may have had some feelings about what her husband did. But then she was pregnant, so Kamsa would have known and did his thing anyways. So
I was just relating this to my life. Like, you know, a lot of things happen in life, and obviously I don't know the plan of the Lord. I have noticed and seen many times that things happen, and in retrospect, it was good for me, good for my spiritual progress and all that. But usually I find myself in those situations, when going through those situations, complaining and all that. So I was just wondering, like, how to, you know, develop that faith that whatever happening is actually happening by the mercy of the Lord, and, you know, be patient there.
Well, there's two sides. One is faith is nourished by sadhu sangha, and so more sadhu sangha will nourish faith. Another principle is by acting on what you hear, it brings realization which nourishes faith. Even, here's a third, but you know, even your understanding in retrospect, things were good for me, there's yet another layer or level of it's good for me, and that is the ordeal that I just went through, or I am going through, is Krishna's mercy to uproot the very root, the very tendency for being an enjoyer of my activities, fruitive activities. The pain is my attachment to that, and the circumstance is helping me overcome that. Just somebody sent me something. I'll just read it. Just came into my system this morning. I have to. So the context is when difficulties come, we're taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Trinadapi Suniche Na. Taror Iva Sahishna, we're taught to be more tolerant than a tree. So I'll just read. Bhagavatam 11:23:3. So this is Uddhava Gita. Sharp arrows which pierce one's chest and reach the heart do not cause as much suffering as the arrows of harsh, insulting words that become lodged within the heart when spoken by uncivilized men. However, then this is now, devotees tolerate and see whatever difficulties come to them as the result of their own acts. They don't blame outside forces, even when they are the apparent cause. When Maharaj Parikshit found that Dharma, the bull, had three broken legs, he asked him who had done this. 1:17:18. And my computer is not cooperating. There we go. Oh, greatest amongst human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our sufferings, because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Bhaktisiddhanta comments on 11:23:5, which is two verses after 11:23:3, his commentary, Bhagavatam, Uddhava Gita commentary. Quote, often those who give up the materialistic path and devote themselves to renunciation are attacked by impious persons. This analysis, however, is superficial, since the punishment is actually the cumulative result of one's past karma. Some renunciants show lack of tolerance when presented with the remnants of their previous sins, and thus are forced to enter again onto the path of impious life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore instructs that one should become tolerant as a tree if a neophyte on the path of devotional service to the Lord's pure devotees is attacked by envious persons. This is not the sannyasi, it's just the neophyte. He must accept it as a consequence of his previous fruitive activities. One should be intelligent and avoid future unhappiness by rejecting the ethic of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. If one refuses to enter into enmity and envy with envious men, they will automatically leave him alone. Now, that's specific to harsh words, but you know, that, so it's not the whole range of circumstances that are uncomfortable or painful or worrisome or struggle-causing. But it's the same principle that regularly Bhaktisiddhanta speaks. When devotees go through tribulation, it's Krishna's mercy. What Krishna is doing. We may not understand how and why and so forth, and maybe he could do it differently, please. But it's to uproot the tendency, deep-rooted tendency for fruitive activity. Fruitive activity meaning do stuff to get stuff, to be the enjoyer of stuff. You know, God's competitor. And that's fruitive activity. And to uproot the tendency, it can be a painful process. So, back down to what your question was, you know, you realize it's really good for you, although, in retrospect, while going through, it looks really awful, so how to have more faith? Well, understand by association with sadhus, like Bhaktisiddhanta or Krishna and Uddhava and, you know, everything, that's sadhu sangha through sound. And our consciousness can be elevated, our faith can be uplifted. You know, what happens when we're unsteady is that we're uplifted and then back down again because we're conditioned in the modes of nature and so forth. But the principle doesn't change, how to strengthen faith. Sadhu Sangha and acting on the knowledge that you receive from the sadhus. And it gives an experience, it gives realization. So faith increases. And we're unsteady, so it's up and down, but that's the method. It's actually Krishna's association through the medium of his representatives. That's another layer or stage of realization. Krishna loves us. And that love of Krishna is coming through the devotees. And it's also coming through, you know, the ordeal. We may not see Krishna's hand in all circumstances, but he's particularly kind. He's kind to all living entities, but he's reciprocating with our intention to get closer to him, to be connected to him. Again. To leave the Maya condition and enter into the spiritual condition, the internal potency condition. and those that are within the internal potency or connected with or through the internal potency, you feel that. That's where faith increases. And then it doesn't matter what. Not like, you know, you whine and complain, it shouldn't be like this. I'm nice. Krishna's not being nice. Okay. Anything else in the room? Or we'll go to online. We'll go to online.
So this first question is from Divyambara Devidasi Mataji, who asks, for the faith in science has been so far blind and strong. Also, by hearing and descending mercy, there is some faith in the Vedic process. How to have firm faith instead of mixed faith, which is my current state.
Okay, that was the previous question. Next question.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, demons do not have faith. Oh, sorry, yeah, this one is from Dr. Demons do not have faith, but how could Kamsa be able to believe the words of Sri Narada Muni about information of Sri Krishna and Sri Balaram in Vrindavan from Vishalaksha Das?
Well, everyone has faith according to the modes of nature. And he, Kamsa, had respect for Narada. I mean, we heard. He went out to see him. Here he is, effulgent, and, you know. He had some sense of, here's a holy person. Now, what the advantage of association with the holy person is can mean different things to different persons. It can mean, you know, to get what I want. You know, Swamiji, please give your blessings that I'll become a millionaire. So he had faith in Narada. And look what Narada's doing. He's giving him like some inside secrets. So, wow, you're good. Thank you very much. So we have faith. He didn't have faith in the personality of Godhead. He saw the personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, as an enemy. But, you know, he didn't necessarily see Narada as a representative of the enemy. He saw him as a saintly person and had faith in his words. Especially when he was telling him, like, you know, they're conspiring against you. That's like, hey, you're good. You're giving me this inside scoop of I got to watch my backside.
This one is from Rajeshwari Prana Devidasi Mataji. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, the 6 children of Devaki getting killed. Is there any significance to the 6 children before Krishna and Balaram appeared? Or is it just numbers?
No. It's not just numbers. There's a long history, and I don't want to narrate it now. But what I'll do is, I'll send it to, it's right in the Bhagavatam. I mean, I don't know, if I need to do the homework for you, I could do it. How about this? Somebody in the room take the task of cutting and pasting that commentary where Prabhupada explains. Okay. You'll do that and send it to her.
That's from the Bhagavatam.
Yeah. So next. It's in the appendix of chapter 1. I mean, the addendum, excuse me, of chapter 1. Colin, Amy, and, you know, the whole thing.
the next question.
The next question is from Sanjari Dasi Mataji, and she asks, if the goal in devotional service is to hear with faith no matter who the speaker is, why are we most attracted to hearing from some people than others, whether it is in a class or kirtan?
Okay, well, that's not a goal, that's a process, which is different than the goal. And it's not that we're supposed to have faith equally in everyone, supposing somebody's, you know, out to lunch and have their speaking. So you don't have equal faith in everyone. And why we have different quantities or qualities, rather, of faith, different degrees of faith, part of it has to do with relationship. But so supposing there's a very qualified speaker, and you don't know that they're a very qualified speaker. I mean, it's something that she shared with me in writing, you know, initially hearing from somebody, not like exactly my guard's up, but my heart's not open. So, but you hear, and then you then can become clearer about how much faith you want to invest in hearing that person speaking. So it's a combination of factors. Why? And then, in course of time, that faith can evolve, or the faith can stay. You know, I think I want to be more cautious about hearing from that person because they say things that are like wild. Okay, more.
This one is from Tina Mataji.
Who? Stira?
Christina from NYC.
Yes, Stira.
Christina.
Oh,
from
Christina. Okay, yes, Nina. Okay.
She asks, as past karma affects our current situation, even with spiritual growth, what is the encouragement that reminds us of our spiritual progress?
Our spiritual progress? That's our question.
And also, does the modes of nature affect babies in the womb? Like, that's a different question, but her question is like, what is the encouragement that reminds us of our spiritual progress?
Well, let's just go back and rephrase and see if I've understood what her question is. I'm a new devotee. And I'm engaging in the practices of devotional service, and I believe I have, you know, some karmic influences still operating in my life. And so the question is, how do I regard those karmic influences still happening in my life in relation to my position as a new devotee? Is that the question? Not exactly.
As past karma affects our current situation, even with spiritual growth, because karma is affecting.
Well, it's not exactly affecting on a one-to-one correlation. It's remotely affecting more. Using Prabhupada's example, supposing you get a bruise on your arm, and you can know. This is just a token reminder if you'd have got a broken arm. It's being minimized as a token reminder of my past misdeeds. So it's not a one-to-one correlation. It's just the difficulty that's coming my way is connected to my past misdeeds, and it's being minimized, and it's to remind me of my past misdeeds. And I just tolerate it. Okay.
She also asks, Maharaj, do the modes of nature affect babies in the womb?
Yes. So listen to spiritual sound as much as possible. But you're not yet a pure, the mother with a child in her womb is not yet a pure devotee, then your modes of nature are going to be passed on to the child. And like, they have no choice in the matter. You do. the mother carrying the child in her womb has the choices. And they're dependent upon your choices. Modes of nature, choices.
This one, no, let's say we just did that.
We did. I'll ask it again, but we just did.
If the goal in devotional service is to hear with faith, no matter who the speaker is.
Little father-son engagement over here. It was quite smooth, I'll have to compliment both of you. I've seen worse.
This one is from Giri Votikota Prabhu, and he asks Hare Krishna Maharaj, if Kamsa has faith in the message of killing sons of Devaki, why does he not have faith in giving away bad deeds?
Giving away bad deeds?
Or I think he means like giving up bad deeds.
Well, like Narada didn't instruct him because he wouldn't be able to follow that. He gave him instructions that he could follow. Narada, you know, doesn't give something to people to do they can't do. And plus he knew the Leela. He's an empowered person that understands the whole deal. Just like even before he went, he knew Krishna's Braja Leela is winding up, and now I got to go help the next thing happen. So he has not the omniscience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but everything that he needs to know to do his service for the Personality of Godhead. He knew all kinds of things that we don't understand. But he understood. He's just playing a role in Krishna's pastimes.
And the second part of that question is, how do we put this in our life?
Well, associate with those that have higher Krishna consciousness than you do, as far as possible. And, you know, we're hearing commentaries. We're doing that right now. That's what we do. To elevate our consciousness so we can understand things tomorrow that we can't understand today. And yesterday we didn't even know it existed. Good?
This one is from Uttama Bhakta Das Prabhu, and he asks, does material faith mean show me now, and then spiritual faith means I can wait?
Sounds cute. That's nice. I mean, you can unpack that a little bit, but yeah, that's nice. Go ahead.
The next one is from Amara Devi Dasi Mataji, and she asks, or she says she has two questions. The first one is, I was curious to know more about the name Anakadundubi of Vasudev. What is the meaning of this?
It has to do, I don't know precisely, but it has to do with the lineage of kings in which he came, and I can't remember the detail. But you can go look it up, and rather than me do the homework for you, it's somebody in the lineage of kings, and it's in reference to someone in the lineage of kings prior to him, and therefore he was given or known by that name. I can't remember the detail of the lineage of kings and how that name stuck to him.
The second question is, we are recommended to chant with the feeling of a child crying for his mother. And also, we understand from authorities that Krishna is present right in his name. As soon as we start chanting, Krishna is right there. Can you kindly help us understand why we're advised to cry for Krishna if he's present in his name?
Because our heart is closed. And crying like that is opening of the heart. That's all.
One last question. Oh, no, never mind. That's okay.
Okay.
There was one question from yesterday which came in last minute. Can I go with that? This was from Uttama Bhakta Dasa. Lord Ram's dharma and Lord Krishna's dharma. If someone has objection over later...
Objection what?
Over Lord Krishna's dharma. He's trying to compare how Lord Krishna...
Why is there a different dharma? They have the same dharma.
His final thing, question is, can we simply say it's law versus love?
No. It's the same dharma. There's an emphasis of their leela, but it's not law versus love. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai. Jai.